From Connecticut Public Radio, this is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. Ned Lamont has a name recognition after running for the U.S. Senate and in the 2010 Connecticut governor's race. And up until 1 week ago, polls showed him leading this year's five-way race for governor. That's not the case anymore, according to the latest polls that find Lamont in a statistical tie with GOP candidate Bob Stefanowski. Now, how does Lamont plan to engage potential voters with just 11 days to go before Election Day? And what questions do you have for him? You can join our conversation, 860-275-7266. You can also find us on Facebook Live. You can just search for Where We Live on Facebook and add your question or comment below that live video stream. I want to welcome Ned Lamont back to the show. Nice to see you again.
Hi, Lucy. Great to be here.
So let's just get right to it. A new poll from Sacred Heart University in Hearst, Connecticut, finds that you and Bob Stefanowski are in a statistical tie. How do you respond to those poll results?
Who cares? We got 11 days to go. It's all about turnout. It's all about making people realize how important an election can be. I think 2 years ago, we found out in Washington, D.C., in the White House, how important an election can be if you don't turn out. And I just got to remind people every day that there's an enormous difference between me and Bob Stefanowski in terms of where we want to take this state. He would have a tax scheme that would eliminate taxes for $1.4 billion in taxes for the 400 richest families in the state. And I argue, you know who's going to pay for that? Hartford and our small towns in terms of higher property tax and hits to education. And I'm going to slowly reduce the property tax, but I got to be honest with people where we go. There's a big choice in this election.
You said that you don't care about the poll results, but your campaign must be doing internal polling to figure out, you know, where your strengths are in the state of Connecticut and where your weaknesses are. And what is your campaign telling you on how you need to work better to engage voters?
I think there's a fair number of people who are mad as hell and not going to take it anymore. And there's definitely that group out there that says both parties have been a mess, or I blame everything on Malloy. Let's, throw it out and start again. It's sort of the same attitude you saw with Donald Trump 2 years ago. And so I've got to convince people that, look, I represent real change. I'm going to go in there. I'm going to hold down taxes. And more importantly, I'm going to streamline and reduce costs for state government. I know how to do that. I come out of business. That's what my background is. I understand that people are frustrated. I understand that the middle class is getting slammed, but we got to do it in an honest and truthful way.
So when you're out there on the campaign trail, how are you actually engaging with voters, and specifically Hispanic and Black voters who we're hearing from who feel like, none of the candidates really are appealing to them? So how are you doing that?
I don't know about that. I think people get engaged late, and you're right. Probably a couple of months ago, we could have used a little more energy. But I was in New Haven yesterday, and we marched for jobs with about 300 people in downtown New Haven. I was in an event in Bloomfield yesterday, overwhelmingly African-American, and we needed a bigger house. So I think that people understand what's at stake. And if you're living in a city, if you're a person of color, you know that eliminating the income tax, eliminating $10 billion out of our budget would be a big hit to our cities and a big hit to our kids.
Coming up, we're going to talk more about specifics about your plan. But, just to follow up on, reaching Black and Latino Hispanic residents in the state of Connecticut, when you were on the show prior to the primary, we asked you about your decision to choose Susan Bicewicz as your running mate. Do you still stand by that decision? Because if you had chosen someone like Eva, would she have been the kind of person that could have energized the cities to come out for you?
Look, Eva's been great. She did a radio ad. She's campaigning for us. But Susan Bicewicz is a really good running mate for me. And let me tell you why. Politics is politics. But more importantly, she knows Hartford. She was in the legislature. She was Secretary of State. She knows her way around. I'm the outsider. I was the entrepreneur. I like to take on the status quo. I'm going to come up here and shake things up. She's going to help me get it done.
You mentioned that the latest poll results are showing that you're neck and neck with the GOP candidate. That's not something that is concerning to you. But what about the same poll finding that more unaffiliated voters, which are the largest group of voters in Connecticut, are actually more likely to vote for Bob Stefanowski?
Well, I think, a lot of them are Republican-leaning. They also voted for Tom Foley last time around. But I want to do a better job of reaching out to them. I mean, let's face it. I've run twice before statewide. I've never really taken on a Republican before. I took on Joe Lieberman because I thought he was wrong in the war in Iraq, and I took on Dan Malloy because I didn't think he would make the big changes we needed to turn the state around. So now I'm making up for lost time and not running against one but two Republicans in Oz and Bob. I've got to convince independents that I'm my own man, and I'm going to go out there and make the changes I need and let the political chips fall where they may. That's what I've done my whole life. You know, in business, I took on the big cable conglomerates and took them on. In politics, like I said, I took on my own party when it was necessary.
You're hearing Ned Lamont in our studios today here on Where We Live. Again, he's the Democratic-endorsed candidate in the five-way governor's race. And you can ask a question of Ned, the number 860-275-7266. You can also find us on Facebook Live today. Just search for Where We Live. Add your question below the live video stream. And as always, on Twitter, at Where We Live. I'll take a call when my cursor decides to work. Here we go. Peter from North Haven. Peter, go ahead.
Yes, I think it's great that Ned Lamont is there. He doesn't miss any of the events, especially something like this, like Bob Stefanowski. Dick is, you know, we want someone. No one wants to look foolish or uninformed, out of touch with an important interview that the candidates have on the important forum like this. And also, time is now to avoid risky business strategies while gambling on Connecticut's future success and financial stability. Ned Lamont is better informed, more knowledgeable, more flexible, open-minded, more accessible, and available to respond to Connecticut voters. We do not need to replace one of our nation's low-performing, low-ranking leaders with someone who would likely disappoint Connecticut taxpayers.
All right. Thank you, Peter, for your call. We've got a lot of calls lined up, so I want to take another one. Paul's calling from Ellington. Paul, go ahead.
Hi, Ned. I'd like to ask you a tough question. I don't want to, you know, be at the heavy here. It's a yes or no question, and if your answer is no, could you tell us why? Will you move to repeal the 2017 CBAC agreement?
No. I'll tell you why. That's a 10-year court case, and it's the wrong thing to do. I am the one candidate for governor who respects labor, understands that our pension problem is not the fault of our teachers, not the fault of our state employees. It's not their fault that governors going back a generation didn't honor their commitment. And frankly, I come from the private sector. You would have gone to jail if you make promises and then don't honor the commitment in terms of funding of the pensions. That said, I think I'm the one person that actually sit down with labor and collective bargaining means bargaining. It means honest negotiation. It means good faith negotiation. But no, I would not be the candidate or governor that tears up the agreement, walks away, and says, take me to court. That's not the type of person I am. That's not the type of state we are.
Under the Malloy administration, you know, we have heard and seen how the administration has asked for concessions several times. How do you think that will play out again? Because you've got this more than $4 billion deficit, if you're elected governor, that you have to figure out how are you going to plug it. And, you know, there's only so much that you can do because of those labor agreements. And you said that you wouldn't want to go to court, as some of your other candidates, the candidates have suggested, to break these potential agreements. So how do you do it, Ned?
Well, first of all, it's only a $4 billion deficit if I don't deal with the $2.5 billion deficit in the first year in an honest way. And when Oz and Bob say, hey, we'll maybe take some money from the rainy day fund, you're right. Then you're just going to push that deficit to the next year, and then it could be a $4 billion. I think that's the exact wrong way to go. I think you need a governor who's going to go in and tackle this deficit head on. I think I want to do that in year one. And where do you go? I go where the money is. Willie Sutton, right? Right now, there's a lot of money in health care. That's one of the few places where we have, quote, discretionary spending or money that I can have more control over. That's about 25% of the budget, Lucy. That's not just Medicaid, but it's also state employee and retirees. And we pay much too much for drugs, much too much for pharma. Other states like New Jersey have put together very aggressive bids. They've used their purchasing power, and they've saved hundreds of millions of dollars by reducing the cost of pharma. We can do that alone, or maybe I can do that with Gina over in Rhode Island. I can do that with Charlie Baker over in Massachusetts. get together, use even more purchasing power, drive down those costs. Those are the type of ways that we're going to save some real money up front.
That sounds like that could take some time in negotiating. Your opponent mentions that if Connecticut residents elect you, that you would hike up taxes. What would you say to people listening now?
Well, Bob Stefanowski is going to eliminate the income tax, which obviously really only helps, you know, the most wealthy folks. And I can't afford to do that. I think it's a fake promise. I'm going to hold the line on that. I am going to, put money in education, which means your local town, Willimantic, Ansonia, won't have to jack up its property taxes. And I even have a plan to have a small reduction in property tax, which we do through the individual income tax. So $300 cut for your property tax in the first budget, up to $1,500 in the second budget.
But that'll cost the state money to do. How do you then give that property tax credit to some residents, and then with this promise of still funding public schools?
Well, remember, the property tax credit I've got in the first budget costs $140 million. Compare that to the $10 or $11 billion they're talking about yanking from the income tax. So at least put these into scale. And $140 million, we've paid for that through a tax on sports betting and looking at the sales tax and how we can more effectively enforce that.
So you mentioned looking at the sales tax and how you could effectively enforce that. So you're talking about online, where people are purchasing and not paying the tax back to the state of Connecticut? Or?
Well, both. Okay. But right now, we failed to collect, 30, 40%, high percentage of the sales tax revenues that are due. Some of it's cash economy. Some of it's companies that are, too small. I don't want to hassle, but I think we could do a better job there. But your other point is well taken. Lamont's, watch out for Lamont and taxes. Well, I just think it's fundamentally unfair that our Main Street businesses, retail, all have to collect sales tax and remit that back to the state. And too many of the big online, out-of-state internet retailers don't. They don't collect the sales tax. It costs our state hundreds of millions of dollars, and it unlevels the playing field. It's an unfair playing field for our Main Street businesses. If you want Main Street here in Hartford to come back to life, part of it is allowing our Main Street guys to compete fairly.
Ned Lamont's here on Where We Live. You can join our conversation, 860-275-7266. I wanted to go back to a strategy that your opponent is using, mentioning that if residents vote for you, you'll raise taxes. You say that's not the case. But he also ties you to Dan Malloy, and he is a very unpopular governor. Do you think that strategy of tying you with Dan Malloy's name is going to cost you this race, Ned?
If Bob had something to say on his own plan, he would stop talking about me constantly. Most of his ads don't even mention his name. You know why? Because they're independent expenditure ads, and they can't. All they can do is make up stuff about me. All right, I'm my own man. I took on Dan Malloy 8 years ago. I challenged him. I didn't think he was going to make the big changes we needed to do. And Bob didn't even bother to vote. So let's put that on the table first and foremost. I'm going to go up there and make the big changes we should have done 8 years ago. We should have done 18 years ago. And secondly, stop blaming the past. Who does that help? I mean, you want me to? I can knock John Rowland. I mean, he inherited a surplus, promised to eliminate the income tax. And how did that work out? More importantly, nobody cares. They want to know where we're going now. What are you going to do on November 7th? What are you going to do when you take office? How are you going to get this state growing again? As the first guy who started a business and created jobs in generations, I have a very different background than Dan Malloy. He was a prosecutor early in his career. I was an entrepreneur. I was a business person. When I built telecommunication systems, we weren't Republicans or Democrats. We were building a system on schedule, on budget. And if it all worked out, we had a pretty good party the next week and then lived to fight another day. And I think we need a little bit more of that attitude in Hartford.
I want to ask you again, your first job, if elected, would be to put forth a balanced budget. The General Assembly, there are key elections also November 6th, where the Republican Party might be able to finally have control of the House after many decades. And you know that the state Senate is at a tie. How would you work across the aisle because of the deep partisanship that has been shown, not just here in Connecticut, but across the country?
Well, I'm going to work with anybody that's ready to honestly come to the table and solve this thing. Hey, Len Fasano. Hey, Themis. Come on in. Marty, Bob, I need you here at the table. Maybe you guys haven't talked in a long time. I know the governor wasn't even in the room for the last cycle. You are going to be part of the solution. I don't need you sitting on the sidelines throwing spitballs. You got a good idea. Let's run with it. I'll give you the credit. I'll take the heat for the tough decisions. I'll say the same thing to business and labor. I need you at the table. No more blaming each other. You know, business, I need your help. I need your help, you know, really in terms of job training and making sure that you are working in collaboration with our community colleges and we're training people for the tens of thousands of jobs we can't fill right now. I want to bring down the cost of community college. Maybe like Pratt & Whitney, you get a certificate or degree in laser welding, take a job at Pratt, they forgive your student loan. Those are the type of strategies that would allow us to make education and workforce development a lot less expensive. And at the end of the day, we don't need more taxes. We need more taxpayers. We got to start growing this economy again. I know how to do that.
This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. Ned Lamont is here. He's a Democratic-endorsed candidate for governor. He's also here to answer your questions. We're going to take your questions and your phone calls right after the break. The number 860-275-7266. Also find us on Facebook Live. Just search for Where We Live. This is Where We Live from Connecticut Public Radio. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. The Democratic candidate for governor is here with me today. Ned Lamont is also here to answer your questions. The number 860-275-7266. We're on Facebook Live. Search for Where We Live. You can add your question below the live video stream. And as always, find us on Twitter at Where We Live. Sean's calling from Greenwich. Sean, go ahead.
Hi. Ned, you have said that you will not balance the budget on the backs of teachers. I'd like to ask you about the pension obligation bond, which is out there, which is forcing contributions to go very strongly up over the next few years. Do you intend to call that bond and refinance it with more reasonable bond covenants, or would you renegotiate those covenants with existing bondholders?
Hey, Sean, how you doing? Let me tell you what we do in the Teachers Pension Fund. And Sean accurately described the fact that we got a bond covenant on there. We, you know, did a pension obligation bond in 2008 or something, probably the worst possible time we could have borrowed money to buy equities. But, again, let's look forward. I would do two things on the Teacher Pension Fund. One, I would do a better job on the asset side, not just in terms of investments, but actually put more assets into the teacher's fund. A lot of people have talked about, and I'm sympathetic to, putting the lottery right lock, stock, and barrel into that fund. It would represent, you know, $300 million a year into the teacher's pension fund, and also represents, you know, $5, $6 billion in asset value. As part of that, to Sean's question, I would like to go back to the bondholders. I would say, look, we're going to honor our commitments. We're going to honor our commitments to the teachers. But to do it over the next 7 to 10 years would push us over a fiscal cliff that we cannot afford to do. So like we did on the state employee fund, I'd like to re-amortize that bond and pay it out over 20 years, not over 10 years. That would lower a bit our annual contribution, but more importantly, smooth it out so we can afford to do it. Pretty technical question, Sean. Thank you.
We were talking about ways to cut spending and dealing with the big multi-billion dollar liabilities that the state of Connecticut still has to pay. You say you're committed to keeping in place funding for critical services like social services and higher education. But what about regionalization? We hear that term time and time again. And there is talk about the need for all of these 169 towns and cities and hamlets and villages to come together and figure out a way to share services. How would you push that if you're elected governor?
I'd push that hard with incentives, but I would push it. I respect our 169 towns and their feisty sense of independence, and they're going to keep their sovereignty. But when it comes to the back office and shared services, be that purchasing, be that IT, be that the fact that we have more superintendents and deputy superintendents and chiefs and deputy chiefs, really, than almost any state per capita, because we have so many of these local towns, and that drives up costs a lot. And give you one example when it comes to state aid to education. We're one of the very few states that actually pays more for administrators outside the classroom than teachers in the classroom. Again, too many very small school districts. So I'm going to do what I can in terms of shared services. That would drive down costs and I hope make government a little more effective for people.
You mentioned incentives, so to try to entice towns to work together. Can you give any examples?
Sure. Two of you have pretty small high schools, and I know you'd like state funding to rebuild both those high schools. And, you know, if you put those two high schools together, like I think it's Derby and Ansonia maybe, you know, that's something we could fund. And that would mean you go from small school to a bigger school. That brings down the administrative costs dramatically and makes a good difference.
Join our conversation on Where We Live, the number 860-275-7266. Chuck's calling from Norwalk. Chuck, go ahead.
Ned, thank you for being a voice of reason. We have about eight cities, Hartford, New Haven, Hamden, East Haven, West Haven, and others who are all basically broke. Do you let them file and restructure like Waterbury did? What do you do with those cities?
God, I'm getting tough questions here. I would not have done it the way we did it here in Hartford. I think that bailout favored bondholders and bond insurance guys, and now the legislature is going, oh, my gosh, I don't know exactly what I voted on when I did that. You know, I will do a much better job of funding what the state's obligation is. That's ECS, cost sharing, so we can continue to improve upon our contributions to schools, especially those in the most distressed communities, and do a better job, Chuck, on pilot as well, payment in lieu of taxes. Those are two obligations that the state has. So if I can do that on a more consistent basis, that helps a lot of those towns you were talking about. But fundamentally, what I've got to do is bring growth back to those communities and expand the grand list, again, so you have more properties on that grand list that are paying property tax. And one to the communities you just mentioned there, here's one tangible idea that I'd like to work on very early, which is open up Tweed Airport to more regional air service. I think that would be transformative to you know, East Haven and West Haven and some of the other communities that you mentioned there, as well as New Haven. Open up that part of the state. And that would mean a lot in terms of driving a business and jobs.
Duncan's calling from New Canaan. Duncan, go ahead with your question. Duncan, are you there?
Yeah. I'm Spencer. Is that who you're looking for?
Duncan, you want to ask a question of Ned Lamont? Go ahead.
Yes, hi. Can you hear me? This is Spencer from New Canaan.
Oh, I'm sorry. It said Duncan. My apologies. Go ahead, Spencer.
Yeah, my question for Ned.
You got it.
Ned, I think we know where you stand on a potential reform of the income tax, but I'm curious how you feel about the estate tax, which has been blamed for running quite a few older residents out of the state and to Connecticut, or to Florida in particular, especially from Fairfield County.
Well, first of all, we'll be raising the exemption on the estate tax. It's already in the books. I think next year or the year thereafter to $22 million. So that handles that issue for a lot of folks, but not necessarily in Greenwich, New Kent, in Darien, and some other places. Before I make any other big promises regarding the estate tax, I've got to deal with the budget deficit that I'm inheriting. And I'm asking a lot of people to make some changes and make some compromises. So this is the time for me to deal with our long-term pension obligations, our long-term health care obligations. And once I get things stabilized, then we can talk about some of the other changes we'd like to make, including the estate tax.
You mentioned those obligations. Why not use the rainy day fund, which is something that both Stefanowski and Oz Griebel, the unaffiliated candidate, say that's what it's there for. It would help you cut down the deficit.
I think they're dead wrong on that. I think this is the time you want to put your shoulder to the wheel and deal with a structural deficit once and for all and not kick the can down the road. And this is not what the rainy day fund is for. The rainy day fund is for when we've got a budget, it's in place, market crashes, something bad happens, and all of a sudden at the end of the year, we didn't have the revenues there that we had budgeted against. And the rainy day fund comes in and shores that up. That's what the rainy day fund is, during a time when the clouds are out there and the skies are not as sunny. Right now, our economy is doing pretty well. This is the exact wrong time to punt, kick the can, and take from the rainy day fund.
Other revenue streams that you have said that you want to explore include, I believe last time you were on, you said that you would support legalizing recreational marijuana in the state of Connecticut?
I do. I do for, you know, a whole variety of reasons. Cat's out of the bag. Canada's done it. Massachusetts done it. New York, New Jersey is about to do it. It creates a certain disrespect for the law. I think the laws are unfairly applied, sometimes against people of color. And I don't want this run by the black market anymore. I want to regulate it. I want to do it carefully. And we can get a little bit of revenue out of there, which we can use towards opioid addiction treatment and some other important causes.
Another revenue generator that is not popular among a portion of Connecticut residents, and that's this idea of putting tolls on the roads, but you still maintain that you'd only want to do that with trucks.
I would. Hey, look, our transportation system is in gridlock. It's in disrepair. The folks who are calling from Fairfield County, they know it takes 10 minutes longer to take the train from Stanford to New York than it did just a decade ago, so ago. They got to slow up over these 90-year-old trains. The gridlock on the highways is killing us. GE told us that, other guys that left. And you got to pay for it. You know, Bob says, we'll pay for it by more borrowing. Not going to happen. That's just the attitude that got us into this mess. So, yep, I've talked about putting electronic tolls on the tractor-trailer trucks, just like they're doing in Rhode Island over the last 7 or 8 months. It would raise, Lucy, about $250 million. They pay those tolls in all the other states. They can help out here. Why does the Connecticut taxpayer have to pay 100% of, a road repair? I know it's not popular. Sorry, folks. It's the only honest solution I can think of.
And when we brought this up in July with you, again, that was right when the Truckers Association was filing their suit against the state of Rhode Island, saying that idea of only tolling tractor trailers, it goes against the Commerce Clause.
We'll see. They've obviously the big truckers don't like it too much, and they have brought a suit against Rhode Island, and I think that should be decided in the next 3 or 4 months.
Because we're talking about transportation, we know that there is a question before voters about the lockbox that would establish it to pay for transportation. And again, your opponents, Stefanowski, would say that once you put that in place, the General Assembly will figure out a way to raid that money. Where do you stand on the lockbox?
How do you know that's what he would say? I don't know what he would say. But look, it's
that's
a good—
That's what he said. That's what
okay,
he said,
yeah. It's a good faith effort, the lockbox. Support it. Vote for it. Anything you can to keep the politicians' hands off that money, because everybody knows the Energy Efficiency Fund and the Rainy Day Fund now and the Green Bank. There's a habit of taking money that's supposed to go to one cause and ends up going someplace else. Is the lockbox pick-proof? It is in my watch. I can promise you that.
Ned Lamont's with us here on Where We Live. You can join our conversation. Find us on Facebook and add your question below the video stream, also on Twitter. I want to take a couple of more calls before we run out of time. Debbie's calling from Litchfield. Debbie, go ahead.
Hi. I represent about 1,200 doctors in the state in medical specialties. And what we're seeing is the patient-physician relationship is eroded from the high deductibles that patients are paying. And we've presented bills, and I just wanted to know how you feel about that and if there's a way that we can address these high deductibles that are just killing families and having the insurers taking the responsibility of collecting that rather than putting it on the backs of the physicians who are already taxed with administrative burden.
Well, first of all, Debbie, you're the type of person I want to have at the table when we're talking about health care reform, because I know what I know, and I know where I can still learn. My sense is that we're on the right track here in terms of state health care, which is moving more towards value-based, not high deductibles. I want people to have incentives. I don't want them to be disincented. I want them to have incentives to take the meds and the treatment and things that keep them out of the emergency room, keep them out of the hospital. And I want to have our insurance companies aligned with the patients when it comes to keeping people healthy. And I think that's part of what your question is getting at. How can we get folks better aligned so we're all rowing in the same direction? High deductible doesn't necessarily do that.
What about the idea of single payer? Is that something that's not feasible given where we stand on financial footing in Connecticut, Ned?
I think for the state of Connecticut to do that is not very feasible. I'm very sympathetic to at least allowing people to buy into Medicare at an earlier age, buy into Medicaid at an earlier age, open up. I like the exchanges. I'm a champion for Obamacare, by the way. And I don't call it the Affordable Care Act ever since he endorsed me. I call it Obamacare. And, Donald Trump is trying to unwind that. He's walking away from people with pre-existing conditions. And Lucy, that's probably the number one question I get when I go around. If my son with autism, my husband with diabetes, will he have coverage if the federal government says insurance companies don't have to do it anymore? Governor Lamont says your family will still have coverage.
Gus is calling from East Lyme. Gus, go ahead with your question. We just have a couple of minutes left.
Hello?
Yes, Gus, go ahead.
Great.
You know what, Gus? Unfortunately, your phone line is staticky, but I am going to—I think your question was about criminal justice, and then there is a tweet from Mel who writes, Lamont has not released a comprehensive criminal justice reform platform detailing his plans for the future of the criminal justice system. So he wants to know how you'll engage voters by publishing this platform.
Well, engage voters by talking to you about it right now. I mean, everybody knocks Dan Malloy for a lot of things. He was a leader when it comes to criminal justice reform. We have tens of thousands of folks who would otherwise be incarcerated with no opportunity. They are now. They've been trained. They have workforce plans. Labor's been hiring them. They're getting good-paying jobs. The recidivism rate is low, and more importantly, the crime rate is low. I think it's working. It's something I'd like to continue. And by the way, taxpayers, it saved us probably a couple hundred million bucks.
And Emily from Glastonbury, you're going to be our last caller before we run out of time. Go ahead.
Great. Hi, Lucy and Ned. Thanks so much. Real quick, Ned, I'd love to hear about your plans for sustainability and green jobs. We are behind our New England neighbors, in particular Vermont and Maine. I'd love to hear. I'm pretty sure Mother Nature is bipartisan. So if you could share, that'd be great.
Emily, we got to talk about that a lot more. We're a small state. We're a congested state, and we can do a lot with ourselves. We can do a lot by working closely with the region, and I do need help from the federal government. When Donald Trump rolls back efficiency standards, rolls back clean water and clean air standards, that does impact Connecticut. I'll tell you what I can do very specifically is we mentioned the Green Bank, and we mentioned the Energy Efficiency Fund. Those are two things that if I fund, we do a lot in terms of, A, making our electric generation renewable, low carbon or no carbon, and also would serve over time to bring down the high price of electricity. I was on the board of the largest residential energy efficiency company, putting people to work, insulating homes and weatherizing those homes, saves those middle-class families an awful lot of money, saves them on electric costs, put thousands of people in our cities to work, Lucy, and by the way, reduces their carbon footprint. I want to take a lead on this.
I've mentioned your GOP opponent several times, but there's also Oz Griebel again, the unaffiliated candidate. Do you feel like he's a threat to your campaign?
Sometimes I think we divide up the sanity wing of the electorate, and so I think he probably does take some votes away from me. But I think he's wrong on not confronting the fiscal crisis head on. But that said, I also think he's been somebody who's been civically minded, active in the state for a long time, thinks long and hard about these issues. Maybe I can get him to come and join the administration. Who knows?
With 11 days to go, would you ask Oz Griebel to step aside?
I think that's probably a decision that Oz makes himself, but it does impact the election.
Ned Lamont, again, is the Democratic-endorsed candidate for governor. Thank you so much for coming in again and answering questions of our listeners and viewers here on Where We Live.
The pleasure's mine, Lucy. Thanks, everybody, for listening.
This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. All right, so we heard from Ned Lamont, and now we're going to hear from our longtime political analyst about his campaign and what we're going to expect to hear in the days leading up to November 6th, Election Day. From Connecticut Public Radio, this is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. As I just mentioned, Election Day will be here very quickly, 11 days to go, and we're going to wrap up our series of Connecticut gubernatorial candidate interviews on Monday with Amigo Constitution Party candidate Mark Stewart. On the next Where We Live, just what is the Amigo Constitution Party? Stewart's going to join us to explain. He's going to talk about his campaign and take your questions, too. That's coming up Monday. Now, today, Where We Live, we heard from Ned Lamont again. He came on right before the primary. And I want to welcome back to the studio our political analyst. First, Dr. Bilal Sikku, Associate Professor of Political Science in Hillier College at the University of Hartford. Bilal, welcome back.
Good morning.
And Dr. Jonathan Wharton, Assistant Professor of Political Science and Urban Affairs at Southern Connecticut State University. Nice to see you again.
Thank you, Lucy. Of course, I'm wearing the wear on purpose. Got the Southern represented.
That's right, the Southern shirt. And yep. I should mention, Jonathan also is political director for Kurt Miller, the GOP-endorsed candidate for Connecticut State Comptroller. But today he's here just to talk about the gubernatorial race. So how'd you think Ned did with the questions, including what he thinks about the Oz campaign, Jonathan?
Well, we were both talking an awful lot in the green room because he was really fired up this morning. You gave him a cup of your coffee, didn't you? Because it was just amazing how he was completely different this time in terms of having a little bit more spunk, maybe to use his word, a little bit more fire this time. And certainly the questions from the listeners directed that to be for him to be more responsive. So the whole question about the Oz and whether he could be part of the administration, I think that's something we've raised a couple times in terms of that possibility, right?
Yeah.
In a couple of the shows, because there is that concern out there that this is a real possibility of why Oz is putting himself out there, is to make an effort to be a part of the administration if Ned Lamont were to be elected.
Yeah. I think Oz wants to be governor of Connecticut, but I think certainly it was an interesting moment to hear what sounded like a job offer, you know, being made to Oz if his run for the governorship doesn't work out. And I agree with you. This was hard-hitting. I laughed out loud when he made the comment about how he took on Malloy and Bob Stefanowski didn't even vote that year. So this was a Ned Lamont that came out
Ned.
Ready to fight.
Not to mention also backing up Susan Bicewicz, because that's the big question, saying, well, you know, she's the Hartford insider, I'm the outsider. And I was like, I've never heard that assessment, because the concern still resonates about what to do about Eva.
Yeah.
Because going back to your main point, Lucy, and we said this over and over again, she did have that momentum, Eva Zimmerman did, among younger Democrats, even independents, saying, wow, a new fresh face, why not? A union leader. And then it seemed like she was snubbed. But then on the other hand, it's like, oh, Susan Bicewicz is somebody who could be helpful. So to hear that spin was different.
I mean, that was a calculation that I thought from the very beginning when he chose her to be his running mate. I said to myself, this is someone who knows the state, you know, the legislature knows how this place works, still has connections up there, understands it in a way that Annette described himself as an outsider, someone who comes from the business community. And so from that standpoint, to me, this is one of the risks when we bring in outsiders like Ned Lamont or Bob Stefanowski, who really don't understand how the Connecticut legislature works. And so needing someone who has that experience and that skill set can be quite essential for their success.
But for him to be outspoken about it was interesting.
Yeah.
I wanted to go back to one of my first questions to him about how he's reaching Black and Hispanic voters and also what his outreach is like in the cities. Jonathan, you're down in the New Haven area.
I am.
Is Ned Lamont visible enough down there?
Well, that's the big debate. And I have even asked that, you know, among some Democrats. You don't see the signage as much as I thought around there right now. And certainly I've not seen the presence of Tony Harp out there, you know, as a mayor. And some people have said the same thing about Mayor Ganim in Bridgeport. So I wonder what point will we see that? And in talking to some people, they're saying, well, there could be a possibility this can happen at the last minute. There is a tendency in urban areas where that will happen maybe the week before the election. And I think you'll see that coming from the unions especially, Lucy.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that's been great for me at a personal level from listening and participating in all of these interviews is it's been a kind of civics lesson for me. But one of the things that has really sort of impressed upon me is that all of these candidates have not done something I think is really crucial, needs to be done, is to really develop a vision of the future of Connecticut. Mm. Not one that just simply addresses the short-term challenges. Connecticut is a state that has some of the poorest cities in the country, which means that the demands on social services within the state are going to continue to be huge. And so whoever wins this race needs to come up with a vision for the future of Connecticut that tries to close the gap between central cities and suburbs and rural areas to create jobs in cities, to build up infrastructure, make Connecticut a place that young people will want to stay because the cities are happening, make Connecticut a place that companies will want to come because we've got great universities, great infrastructure, great transportation. And to me, that vision is just something that none of these candidates have really laid out.
It's an issue that's true and near to my heart, and I guess I'm just saying that as a nutmegger. I hear this from my students over and over again. I'm sure you do as well,
right,
Professor,
yeah.
That they're concerned about the future and what you're saying, and yet we're hopeful that these candidates and other candidates, even down ballot candidates and even the state House and Senate candidates would offer the same kind of vision, but we're not seeing an emphasis on that.
Right.
It really seems to be more about the economy than anything else.
Right.
We were talking about the effect of Oz's candidacy on Ned Lamont, but I know the Connecticut GOP has a new ad out that says that a vote for Oz is a vote for Ned. So does that show that they are worried about some Republicans or unaffiliated voters who might lean Republican would go for an Oz Griebel?
I think we saw that in the last poll, right? I mean, that he is taking away votes from both sides, but more from Stefanowski. But still, Ned Lamont, they're still, and you heard that in the interview.
Right.
They know he's a concern. They know he's on the radar for both parties. And that's an issue.
Yeah. I mean, and certainly where that can be critical, if some of those votes he's drawn away from Lamont are votes that would come from, say, the Hartford region,
right,
as an example.
That's a good point.
And other central cities. And so, you know, definitely that's something to watch to see how this actually plays out.
Actually, to bring that up, even Lucy, you bring up something that's interesting. I wonder what that percentage is for Oz supporters that are coming from the urban areas, because I think that's coming more. I bet you it's coming more from the suburbs and the, maybe some rural voters, if I were to venture a guess. But yes, definitely for sure the Hartford area.
You're hearing Jonathan Wharton, assistant professor of political science and urban affairs at Southern Connecticut State University, in studio with me, as well as Dr. Bilal Sidhu, associate professor of political science in Hilliard College at the University of Hartford. You can join our conversation too. 860-275-7266. I was surprised that Ned, the way he responded to the poll question, he actually almost sounded, I hate to say it, he sounded like when Dan Malloy is asked about poll numbers showing that, you know, his approval rating is below 20%. Ned says that who cares, but isn't that what campaigns are doing, is polling, polling, polling?
I actually just grinned when you said that because I was looking at my notes and that was what I was about to bring up. It was the most interesting moment, I think, of the interview when he said, the polls don't matter. I'm not paying. And I thought to myself, what politician doesn't pay attention to polls? And so certainly he's paying attention to polls. Certainly he's worried about how this race has now moved from, I think he had an 8-point lead to a race now where the margin of error could be either in Stefanowski's favor or in his favor. And so certainly he's paying attention. I think the way he came into this interview, the way he threw punches, the way he tossed Malloy under the bus a couple of times, you know, clearly indicates that he's in a fighting mode. He understands that between now and Election Day that he's in the fight for his life if he wants to win this race.
And not to mention one thing we're overlooking in these polls. We still have that factor of 15% undecided voters. I'm telling you from the beginning, there are these people at the last minute we don't know about. And remember, the bulk of voters, I will still say, you know, are – you know, obviously, you know, they're undecided. They're right. They're not affiliated with a political party. That's the issue at the end of the day. How are they going to show up, if they show up?
But when he gave that reply about the polls, he also said something I think is very, very true. This election will be about turnout. And so the question of whether you're able to turn out your voters on both sides, will be crucial to this. And as I, you know, someone who has been a big advocate for early voting, I'm sitting around wondering to myself what this would look like if we actually had early voting in Connecticut, where people were actually could get out there and vote early like they're doing in 29 other states across the country. So that's something we need to bring to the floor here in Connecticut as well.
Be interesting to see among other reforms.
Both of you have said that you were impressed with Ned Lamont this time around here on Where We Live.
I would say I was impressed. I say that was probably shocked. It's like, where did this come from?
Putting words into
your
mouth.
Coffee.
it was the energy. Yeah. It was an energy and a fight that I think people have raised questions about whether he had it in him. And clearly with a week and a half or so left to go, he is in fight mode.
But do you think that he could be more polished at this point in his political aims to become the next governor of the state of Connecticut?
Three statewide races. I don't know how much more polished you can become. At this stage, after three runs, this is who you are. And whatever limitations you have, they are part of who you are as a candidate. And certainly he has grown over the years with every effort to run for office. And where you think about the Lieberman race, it was really a one-issue race that really stood out for him. And he's evolved as a candidate since then. And we'll see.
Lucy, I've said from the beginning, we don't have enticing or charismatic statewide candidates that often. I mean, can you remember anybody who has been running for governor? I mean, Tom Foley, Dan Malloy? I mean, who? I mean,
ouch.
This is the problem, you know?
Ouch.
But it's true. It's like, come on. And then hold up. This is the best part about Connecticut, right? It's the last time it happens. We run them multiple times. It's like, how many times can you run? And it doesn't matter. And so I'm always looking for that kind of retail politics kind of candidate. And we just don't. What's going on? This is Connecticut.
Well, I mean, at the same time, it's really good because both Stefanowski and Lamont talked about over the next few days of this campaign, they're going to be out there on the road meeting people. And
yes.
So some of that retail politics hopefully will occur.
At the last minute.
The GOP candidate Bob Stefanowski announced yesterday his bus tour is starting
right.
on Saturday, 52 stops. What do you expect to see from Ned Lamont in the days ahead?
In terms of the response?
In terms of a ground game.
Well, I think that's when the unions kind of will step up, yeah. I'm willing to bet, right? Because that's who I've heard directly from a couple Democratic leaders, at least. And that's what they do effectively. It's just a matter of going back to your earlier issues, can that resonate among Latino and black voters in the urban areas? I just don't see it. So I'm just curious if that could be a possibility. The interesting thing is that with Stefanowski especially, I think he does have that appeal among suburban voters, at least in that way. And going back to even Ned's point, he said this from the beginning. You know, everybody's fed up. They're sick of it, both parties. And he did say that. So what does that mean in terms of, you know, both bus tours? Can they kind of tap that and say, show up on our side? Maybe at the last minute they could pull that out, either side. I don't know.
Well, some of that begins today. I guess Joe Biden is in town. And so when I came in this morning, I heard Ned on the phone talking to people about that visit to the state. And so certainly he is in full campaign mode and will be out there on the road. And this is good for voters. Hopefully we can get some excitement from voters in the state that they will turn out on Election Day. I'm particularly interested in what our students will do this time around. And hope is that they will turn out. I know last few days there's been a lot of activity on campus trying to register students to vote. And so not only do we need to get students registered, we also need them to turn out to vote. And we need to make it easy for them to be able to do that.
We've been seeing a lot more signage on our campus and around our campus, by the way, from both campaigns. So it's interesting. Now this seems maybe we'll be interested. God, right. I hope so. I pray.
Because in many ways, when we think about the future of this state and we think about the issues that really are out there, these are issues that do impact young people. And so they need to be at the polls. They need to turn out to vote.
You mentioned labor having more of a presence in these last several days. In one way, could that also hurt Ned Lamont? Because often his opponents would say labor is one of the reasons we're here, which, you know, we don't agree with, right? But, I mean, that's what's being said out there.
he can't win this race without strong labor support. And so, you know, any worries he may have about how people will respond to a strong presence of labor out there making phone calls and mobilizing on his behalf, I think he needs to just push to the side, because he just will not win without their support.
But he's got to find a way of making a charismatic message and connect that, though. And I don't know if that's really coming down to the, you know, the grassroots on that
end. Not enough time.
Speaking of time, we're out of time. So Dr. Balassi Kyu from University of Hartford and Dr. Jonathan Wharton from Southern Connecticut State University. Always a pleasure. Thanks again
Thank
for coming
you.
In.
Thank you.
Go Owls.
Go Hawks.
Today's show produced by Lydia Brown. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. Thanks for listening.